Chapter 7, The Forest of Night. It was broad daylight when we walked into the forest, but as soon as we passed the first tree, it seemed that darkness had fallen. Not complete darkness, it was more like the darkness of a night when the moon is almost full. Moongobble tried to light the way for us. Picking up a stick the size of his arm, he waved his hand over it, saying, "Iggle, biggle, let 'em be lux." The stick made a whooshing sound and flew straight into the air. A moment later, we heard it explode above us. Pieces of cheese pattered down around us. "That was very exciting," said Irk, "and I'm sure it will delight any mice living here, but it's not going to do us much good." Moongobble scowled at him and looked around for another branch. Holding it up, he cried, "Iggle, biggle, make a stick low." The branch melted in his hand, the wood turning into a sticky goo that ran down his arm. "You need to work on how you say your A's," muttered Irk. Finally, on his third try, Moongobble managed to make a branch cast a dim green glow. The light made it a little easier to see, but it also made things look even spookier than before. "I guess that will have to do," he said with a sigh. "It's the best spell I can come up with." Moongobble made two more torches, one for the rusty knight and one for me. Green light flickering around us, we pressed deeper into the woods. "If it's always dark here, how will we know when it really is night?" I asked after a while. "Of course I'm a real knight," cried the rusty knight. He sounded hurt. I repeated my question more loudly this time. "Oh, that's easy," said the rusty knight. "We can use my belly for a clock. I always know when it's supper time." We walked on. In the green glow of our torches, I could see eyes peering at us from behind trees. Just when I was getting so tired that I didn't think I could go another step, the rusty knight said, "My stomach has spoken. It's supper time." "Before we eat, we must set our trap," Moongobble said. We found a slender tree and bent it to the ground, then staked it into place. Attached to the tree was a rope. We put a coil of the rope on the ground and covered it with leaves. In the center of the rope, we put a big hunk of cheese. We had planned to use raw meat, but Moongobble got the spell wrong. Just as we were finishing, a blood-curdling howl split the darkness. The sound seemed to crawl up and down my spine. I felt a shiver of terror, yet at the same time I felt very sad. "Well," said Irk softly, "there it is, the howl of the weeping werewolf. He must be nearby." I shivered and peered into the darkness. I wondered how close the werewolf really was. I wondered if our trap would work. Most of all, I wondered what would happen if it didn't. Chapter 8, Werewolf Trap. We moved a good distance from the trap. When we had found a place to camp, Fireball started our campfire. Before Fireball came to live with us, Moongobble had always tried to start our campfires with magic. This never worked quite the way it should. Sometimes the logs turned into cheese, tasty but not very useful for light and heat. Sometimes the logs screamed and ran away, exciting but still not very useful. Once they sprouted roots and turned into a miniature forest. All in all, it was better to have Fireball do this kind of thing. "Maybe you should make the torches tomorrow," I said to him, once the fire was blazing away. "Not a good idea," he said, resting his scaly head on my knee. "Real fire is fine for a campsite, but walking through the forest with blazing torches is just asking for trouble. Magical light is safer, even if it is green." We arranged ourselves in a circle with our backs to the flames so we could watch for any sign of the werewolf. Moongobble, the rusty knight, and I were clutching bundles of wolfbane. "Do you really think this stuff will work?" I asked Fireball. He yawned, letting out a little puff of smoke. "If it doesn't, I'll just scorch his butt for you," he said. "Why don't we sing a little campfire song?" I asked the rusty knight after a while. "I know some good ones. They're a bit naughty, but..." "For heaven's sake, be quiet," said Irk impatiently. Suddenly, we heard a noise in the bushes just past the edge of our firelight. "What are you doing here?" growled a harsh voice. Scary as the voice was, it was also sorrowful. So sad, I almost broke out sobbing myself. "We want to talk to the weeping werewolf," he said. "Go away," cried the voice. "Go away while you still can." Then it burst into tears. Soon it was blubbering so loudly that it sounded like its heart had broken. "Go away," it cried again. Then it turned and rushed off. "Wait," Moongobble cried. To my horror, he ran after the werewolf. A moment later, we heard a howl of surprise, followed by a crashing sound and then yips of anger. Our trap had worked! Clutching our torches and our wolfbane, we hurried towards the sounds. Sure enough, we had caught the werewolf. He was shaped like a man, but he was covered with fur and had big, pointy ears. He was dangling upside down from the tree, twisting and lurching in a wild attempt to get free from our trap. His eyes were blazing. Terrible snarls came from his mouth. Moongobble held the bottle under the werewolf's eyes to collect the tears, but the werewolf wasn't crying anymore. All his sorrow had turned to anger. He raged and snapped and howled, but he didn't cry. Moongobble groaned. "Ugh, now what do we do?"